Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on 1400 AM, 99.3 FM WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBear 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. Special thanks to Iola Brubaker from the Upper Great Lakes Health Centers for talking with me in the first segment about the questions and concerns regarding the open enrollment for health insurance. In this segment, Houghton County Emergency Measures Coordinator Jack DeWicke is here. Mr. DeWicke, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, hello, Sam. Glad to be here.
Let's start off. We were going to talk today about winter weather preparedness, and towards the end of the program, definitely have to talk about what's going on with the bridge project. But let's start off with the historic winter that we had last year. What kind of an impact did it have on your department?
Well, and a key word there is historic. We had, I think, 60 days where we didn't get above freezing, and that obviously played havoc on our water handling infrastructure, and that became real problematic for several communities that ended up starting let-run water policies to protect that infrastructure, and then even with those, some infrastructure was damaged. So we're hoping for no return to that, and from what I'm hearing from the National Weather Service, in fact, we're not supposed to get another historic winter.
Is there a close relationship between the emergency coordinator and the National Weather Service in terms of figuring out when heavy snow would be coming?
Yes. Over the years, I've developed a real close working relationship with the National Weather Service. I rely on them to provide emergency broadcasts or what have you if I know that something's happening. Last year, for instance, in Keweenaw County, they really had a couple of major snow events that caused closures of the roads, M26. And the work with the Road Commission and the National Weather Service so that I could put out emergency messages over the NOAA weather radio. Pretty much every spring, I'm in pretty much constant contact with them as regards the Sturgeon River and the level, the flooding level or potential for flooding and what have you. So working with them on those kinds of projects over many, many years, I've gotten a pretty close with the folks down there, so they let me know what's going on. And of course, any citizen can go on their website or get a NOAA weather radio. And I distributed a bunch of those in the county several years back to get up to date weather forecasts and whatnot. And the wintertime, mm-hmm. Sam, particularly, they're pretty good at seeing long term, long range the system snows. Lake effect snow is harder for them to predict,
yeah. mm-hmm.
but the system snows, you see that long way in the, you can see in the future with those system snows. But unlike the summer thunderstorms and stuff that just crop up or heavy winds or whatnot, the winter weather is a little bit easier to predict.
There was talk during last year, I remember attending some of the Board of Commissioner meetings about if the county got to a point where we would need relief fund. There were a couple of counties in the Upper Peninsula who received some of that funding. As bad as it was, did we ever get to that point?
We actually, the townships, there were the townships, every township evaluated, and the villages and the cities evaluated damage that was incurred pursuant to the extremely cold weather that we had. On top of that, a lot of snow, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
There was
ton
of snow.
Oh, yeah.
But we provided a lot of information to FEMA. And I guess the short story version of that is that community block grants were ultimately awarded to several communities in our neck of the woods to help with some of the infrastructure damage. That would be Adams Township. Adams Township did a great job of documenting their needs, and they had what FEMA considered, or what was considered by the state, as substantial damage, as well as the village of Calumet and the village of Lorium. Those three agencies or the units of government ended up getting some money.
Was the county prepared for something? Do you feel like it was prepared, or was it just out of control?
It's just one. I'll tell you, Sam. It's just one of these things that with regards to freezing, it was a very weird disaster in FEMA's eyes. I would have liked to seen FEMA accept as a damage or as a cost lost revenue for all the water that we
exactly.
ended up having to pump.
Yeah.
And if they had considered that as a cost, then that would have put us way above whatever threshold that FEMA has to declare to make a presidential declaration. But they determined that they were not going to consider those costs. And so that limited our ability to be able to get some assistance from other units of government. And so we ended up with the state helping us out with community development block grant awards.
And
it's hard to prepare
yeah,
for.
Yeah, it is. And another huge issue, and I even experienced this myself, was the issue with the freezing pipes.
Yep.
And it seemed like, I mean, for every city council meeting I was going to, you're talking about a couple hundred that were going through. How did it get to be so bad?
Yeah, well, part of the thing is the reason it got so bad was that we got that record cold. Mm-hmm. We got 60 days where it did not get above freezing, and the frost was deeper than anybody can remember. The ground frost was deeper than anybody can remember, 8 to 10 feet, and our normal frost depths are far less than that. So you bury pipes pipes are buried in the ground based on kind of traditional or historic levels where you're fairly certain that in the wintertime you're not going to get these kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
When you get this unusual cold that we got and the frost is driven deeper into the ground, then you obviously have trouble. Now, one way that the communities mitigated that threat, and many communities do this annually or yearly, is let run of policies where people let their water, a pencil stream of water, go through their drain to keep their water lines open. However, I read in the paper where I think the city of Houghton or some of the political subdivisions are saying that that's not a cost that the city or the village is going to incur. That if somebody lets them has a pencil stream water, that they're going to pay the increased water costs, and it's fairly substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And people should, if they've got questions about that as the winter wanes, they should call their village or township clerk or city clerk and find out exactly what the policy is going to be. But I do believe that when the villages, cities, and townships implemented that policy, that we did end up really protecting a lot of our water handling infrastructure, but it's expensive. They're pumping water that they're not getting revenue for.
Mm-hmm.
And then consider too that when you're putting all that water down a drain, if you're on a municipal system, you're putting all that water down a drain. Where does it go? It goes to waste treatment. It dilutes the helpful bacteria that break down effluent at the treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes other issues. So it was an interesting winter last winter.
Is there, I know that once the pipes freeze, there's the let run. I know it's buried so deep. Is there any way to prevent freezing pipes? Or any way to...
Beyond, you know what, Sam? I don't... individuals... Should what I told folks last year, what I advised people last year, is that to the extent that you can, keep your pipes covered with snow.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Copper Country Today here with my guest Jack Dewicki. Let's get into the preparedness aspect and weatherproofing your home in terms of doors and windows. What are some things that people can do to make sure that you don't get that really bad draft that
yep.
seems to come into those little cracks?
Well, of course, it's I read on the, I see on the TV commercials like everybody else that there's no time like the present to, you know, put new windows in or new energy efficient windows in and yada, yada, yada. Some things it's easier certainly to do before the middle of winter, before you get into winter to be able to do, you know, insulating, you know, providing insulation to your attic, having somebody come with infrared or type cameras that sense heat loss or what have you is it's actually a very good way to be able to detect exactly where you're losing heat. It could be from your, again, from your attic. It could be that you just need to, you know, you need to put new skirts on your storm doors to make sure that you're not getting a lot of, you know, air coming in your house through storm doors that don't close properly. There's a myriad of ways I think that people can do what they can do with regards to their insulating. Also, you know, people have been putting film over windows. Like, and I'm talking about a film, like a plastic film, where you put it on your windows and then you heat it with a hairdryer or something like that, and it shrinks up, and that seems to work. We've got, you know, many people have some of the homes that some of these sturdy old copper country homes have withstood, you know, 100 plus winters, and they're not as easy probably to insulate as some of the newer homes, but. Those are a couple of the ways that a person could try to cut the amount of heat loss that they're getting through their system, you know.
And in terms of sticking with the subject of heating and the people who have to rely on propane, who have to rely on other methods of heating, there was, I mean, it was almost people running out. And then they had the price gouging, and there was just a whole big mess with that. What are some of the things people can do to be prepared if they have to rely on those sources?
Boy, that was brutal. That you know, we got the triple whammy last year. They say that part of the problem with the propane deal was that they were redoing a part of their line. And I think that even happened in northern Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. And they had so they had less capacity. Also, there was the crops came in late, and believe it or not, there's a lot of propane that's used to dry crops and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a tremendous demand, and normally that happens earlier in the year. So that demand on propane takes place in like October month or what have you. But last year, that demand took place concurrent with people's heating needs, heating requirements, coupled with the fact that we had the coldest weather, you know, in recorded, for which records go back, and the work on that line. So there's a triple whammy, which drove propane prices through the roof. Now, With regards to trying to mitigate your propane prices, they're saying probably the best way to do that is to get on a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, get on a plan for propane. You know, if it's $1.75 a gallon or what have you right now or whatever it is, then get on a plan so that in the event that there is an increase in demand, that you're not at the mercy of a supplier who may legitimately have a much higher cost in transportation. I'm told that a lot of these guys had to go down where there's a hub maybe in the southern UP. They ended up having to go down far into Wisconsin to pick up propane and stand and wait in line forever to actually get a load of propane to bring back here. So it costs the distributor more, and they pass those costs on to you.
A legit reason to raise the prices.
You're right, but it's a raise in prices. And if you're anything like me, we all live on a fixed budget. And when energy goes up, you know, when a gallon of propane goes up from $1.69 to $5, that is a huge hit on everybody, especially people who have no way to be able to make up that difference.
In terms of people, not only can you weatherproof your house, but you can weatherproof your car. What are some things people can do so that, you know, you don't, you know, get stranded, you know, in a snowstorm?
Yep, and that's a very good question. I think that, you know, they say that you should probably, and with gas prices coming down mm-hmm. a little, I'm not going to say, somebody says, oh, gas is cheap. Gas is not cheap. $2.50 a gallon for gas is not cheap. I'm sorry, I don't consider that cheap, especially when the price of barrel oil is $50. You know, it should be cheaper than that. And I have heard that somewhere in the Detroit area that one of my cousins or something just bought a gallon of gas for $1.99 a gallon. So that's good. But even at $1.99, gas ain't cheap. However, it's better for you to keep at least a half a tank of gas
mm-hmm.
or more. Half a tank of gas. Your car gets down a half a tank, fill it up. If you get stranded someplace, your car could end up being your lifeblood with regards to being able to provide, you know, heat through the motor. I also recommend to people that they carry in the wintertime that you have some extra clothes or what have you that you put in a plastic tub or something like that in the car, so that if you do get stranded, that you've got that you at least have some bulkier clothes or whatnot. I keep a candle, something I got from Cabela's a year ago, a little years and years ago, was like a little like a candle that's in a brass and glass and what have you,
mm-hmm.
and it's amazing. The candles that you put in there last about 6 hours. And actually, if you're in an enclosed car and you light that candle, that heats up and it actually will keep the temperature above freezing in your car. And that, coupled with having some extra clothes, maybe little maybe candy bars that are fairly non-perishable, will get you going if you end up spending a night in a snowbank. And it's happened to me.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Jack Dewicki. Let's get to the bridge. Since we first heard about it to now, have you heard any changes in terms of the closures or anything like that?
No. As everybody knows, our lift bridge, the MDOT's lift bridge, but it's our lift bridge because it goes from the mainland to Copper Island.
Mm-hmm.
There's 20,000 plus people that live on that island in two different counties. All the people in Keweenaw County and, you know, a good portion of the population in Houghton County. MDOT has done a very good job of maintaining that bridge. And now comes the time where they're going to need to do a little deeper maintenance, and that is replacement of the cables and what they call the watch chains and other work. MDOT has had meetings with agencies and interested parties. I'm talking about the hospitals, EMS agencies, law enforcement agencies. As the emergency manager, I've been involved in those meetings as well, etc. And tried to coordinate this work as much as possible. The contractor that was chosen was one that has done work like this before. This is not unusual work for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of Wisconsin. But this work has not been performed on our lift bridge. So I'm not anticipating, you know, I am not anticipating any major problems and any extended closures beyond what they've already advertised, which is about a 10 to 12 hour closure on the 17th of January, and you'll help me with the March date.
It was the middle of March.
It's the middle of March. So I'm confident that they've dotted their I's and crossed their T's, that the contractor is very well aware of what he's getting into, it's going to go well.
Now, in terms of getting emergency vehicles passed during, we'll stick with the January 17th.
Good.
What is the protocol?
Okay. Because a great part of the population lives on the island, and because through infinite wisdom, there's two hospitals located on the island, and on the mainland, our nearest hospital is Barraga Hospital, which is, you know, a good 40 minutes away or so. We've had to take into consideration for that period of time, to 10, 12 hours, what would happen if, you know, we had a transport? What would happen if we had a law enforcement response that was required on the island? So what has been kind of devised is that there will be no closure of the bridge for emergency traffic. For emergency traffic, the contractor will be building ramps.
Okay.
What's happening with this 12-hour, real quickly, and it might interest people to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The center section of that bridge is going to be jacked up. It's going to be jacked up to relieve tension, to relieve the tension on the cables, on the steel cables that hold that center section up. Those cables are going to be unstrung, and that center section is going to be lowered into what they call the low stable position, which is on pins. It's on pins. So it doesn't rely on the cables to support the center section.
Mm-hmm.
That is what's happening on the 17th of January. The center section will be lifted up. The cables will be unstrung. And then after that work is done, the center section will be lowered down to its low stable position, and then traffic will resume. In the meantime, that center section is going to be raised up probably 2 or 2.5 feet, whatever that is. So the contractor will build ramps that go from the center section and slope down into the unlifted section that will allow ambulances, law enforcement,
yep. Okay.
to be able to transit.
So let's say on that the 17th, the big closure.
Yes.
And something goes wrong.
Yep.
Which, I mean, it's,
yep.
you just
Murphy.
Have to, yeah.
Murphy's always injected in these, yes.
What happens if, I mean, the bridge is scheduled to open at 7, but it's not, I know it's a Sunday, but maybe some people, they got somewhere to be, got to go to church.
Yes.
What's going to be the method there? What's going to be going
well,
on?
Well, again, we're certainly hoping for, the good thing is that critical traffic will always be able to get across the bridge. That's that's good. However, if that were to happen, it may be that you go to late Mass instead of early Mass on that day,
mm-hmm.
because of that inconvenience. And again, you have to anticipate those kinds of problems, but to prepare the best way you can, but based on what those plans are, we're certainly hoping for no huge problems in that direction.
Anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Dewicki?
With regards to the bridge, no, I think that's about it. I would like to say, you know, there's a lot of other things that are happening, and I wanted to just let people know. Last year, Osmos, which is a company that's located in Hubble, signed a bunch of people up for their Code Red notification system. Osmos was subsequently purchased by a company called Coppers. Osmos is still using anhydrous ammonia to be able to use their product, because anhydrous ammonia is one of those chemicals that you or one of those things that you don't want to mess with or you don't want to treat flippantly. If there was a release, Coppers wants to make sure that everybody that needs to know or that's in the vicinity of the Tamarack, Hubble, Lake Linden area has an opportunity to sign up for their early notification. Their phone notification, this Code Red, this company that they're using, can notify 1,500 people in 1 minute. So, quickly. Many people have already signed up for that in the Hubble, Tamarack, Lake Linden area. Those of you that have not signed up for that in that area, I encourage you to sign up for it. It'll be a great notification system. They're going to test their system probably in mid-January. So those of you that have signed up, you may get a phone call, a text, or a call on your cell phone, and that's what that's all about. They can notify in the event that there's a catastrophic release, or they can notify just to let you know, to let people know, we know that there's a little ammonia smell in the air. We had a little psst, of ammonia that went off into the plant. It's nothing to worry about, so they can allay people's anxieties. You should go. Those people that want to sign up or that want to get on this notification should go to www.safetysetsthepace.com and follow the prompts. And thank you very much for allowing me to say that.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Dewicki. That'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at keweenawreport.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Copper Country Today.